Welcome, everyone, to another edition of Searching My Soul with Father Cole, and we are thrilled to have in studio with us today Father Cole Kroeke, who is the pastor of the Tri-Parish Community of St. John the Baptist in Vermilion, St. Mary's in New Trier, and St. Matthias in Hampton. Great to see you.
Thanks, and remember, St. Matthias is having their fun fest this
Sunday. Oh, my gosh,
10 a.m., Polka Mass, 11 a.m., the fun begins.
No kidding. Well, that's good. Thanks for the little blurb.
Yeah. So, good to be back.
Yes, it's great to see you. I know that you were recently on just a little R&R time,
yeah,
and you had the opportunity to go to Europe. And,
yep. I was gone
really
for 32 days, traveling,
time.
Yeah, 8 countries in an RV with some very, very dear friends and people that I've known for a long time. I talked in the last segment about kind of the spiritual aspect of vacation, pilgrimage, the need to kind of retreat, right? And interestingly enough, priests are required to take an annual retreat. And just like vacation time, a lot of Americans leave vacation time on the books, priests often leave retreat time, and I'm guilty of that too. I think in my 8 years, I've probably only taken 4 actual retreats. And so this summer, I visited Trier and Lisieux and Lourdes and Rome, and I kind of created my own little built-in retreat during those visits. But I was there for 32 days, and I want to tell you a little bit about this segment, about a very special place that I visited, that it's not necessarily a spiritual place, but it was very, very impactful and very important, and that was actually Normandy, France.
Mm.
I had the opportunity to, you know, it's the 75th anniversary of D-Day.
Yes.
In June, I think it was June 6th, was the 75th anniversary.
Hard to comprehend that it's been that many years ago, and just how that battle has really defined so much of World War II.
Well, especially, you know, Europe, the Western Europe,
yes,
and the places that I visited in France, you know, it was very, very mindful of really, mm-hmm, kind of the
importance of it.
And really the impact of what the war had done on Europe, as far as not only the destruction, but the death and the fracturing of families and relationships and all that. One of my favorite, you know, I love history and I read a lot of books. I read a lot of Stephen Ambrose books. He's a historian. But I don't know if you heard of the miniseries, The Band of Brothers.
I haven't.
Okay. It's an HBO series. I bet it's now probably 20 years old.
Okay.
I believe Tom Hanks was a consultant on it. It's called The Band of Brothers. It was probably 8 or 9 episodes. And it follows the 82nd Airborne Division all the way from them. It's a true story. From them mobilizing before the war, doing boot camp, to their first assignments, all the way up to D-Day and then the liberation. And it's so well done. I remember when I was in college, my roommate and I, you met him when he was in, when he came and visited me. His name was Ken.
Oh, Ben?
Ken, yeah, Ken. You know, my old roommate, Ken, we would watch this this miniseries. And it was such an impactful, because it was a true story.
Right.
And you're following the lives,
right,
of, at the end, they reveal the 75-year-old man that was portrayed as the 18-year-old kid, and you see him and you hear him tell in his, mm-hmm, own words what it was like and how this portrayal was so real. So I actually had a great uncle that was killed in D-Day in Normandy, and so it was very important for me to be able to go to not only visit the beaches but also visit the American cemetery. And so I didn't know what to expect. You know, you see the portrayal. You know, Normandy, it's on the Atlantic coast, kind of in northern France.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the staging, you know, just the General Eisenhower said this was going to be a great place,
right,
to do an amphibious landing, you know. And the story, the timeline, how 12 hours before the invasion or 6 hours before the invasion, they dropped the special forces in on the behind the battle lines to go and to try to take out the snipers so that when
the boats would open
amphibious
up,
assault vehicles came ashore and all that stuff, that, you know, the damage was mitigated. So I didn't know what to expect when I saw these beaches today. And I guess I have to say I was kind of disappointed, because you go to Normandy Beach and you go to Utah Beach today, and guess what it looks like? Any other beach. Any other beach. There are people sunbathing.
There are people sunbathing,
yeah,
there?
Yeah, it's any
you
other.
You would think it would be more sacred.
Right. So there might have been parts outside of the populated area that they might have preserved a little bit, but it was the same thing when I visited Berlin. When I visited Berlin in 2004, I wanted to see the Berlin Wall. I wanted to see the remnants of the Berlin Wall. Do you think I was successful in seeing many remnants of the Berlin Wall?
No.
Why? Why do you think?
Well, I'm sure it's taken down.
But why?
Because it's
the Germans don't want to be reminded
of
it, right?
They don't want
to be reminded of the division. Right. So they actually made, in a lot of situations, they deliberately went to try to minimize, right? And so I think in a lot of situations, too, they went back and they didn't want to preserve this stuff because they didn't want it to be a reminder of such a very, very
But it really is sacred ground when you think of the number of people that were killed
there.
Well,
it is. And so you go to Utah Beach, which is, there's a beautiful museum. And I asked the museum docent, I said, you know, who owns and who runs this museum? And she said, it's actually owned by the little village. They own it and they run it. And it was a museum that largely focused, you know, it was an allied, the D-Day was an allied event. You know, it wasn't just Americans, but America was the biggest part in it. But the artifacts that were preserved, parachutes, medical supplies that were dug up in a field in 1979, helmets. You know, they're still finding artifacts to this day as people are, you know, working the soil and this and that. They're still finding stuff. And what was so amazing is you stand on Utah Beach and Omaha Beach today, and it, like I said, it looks like any other beach. But 75 years ago, it was hell on earth.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was hell on earth. And it was almost assured death for the first wave. You know, they got there and they were mowed down before they even made it to the beachhead. And so to kind of just transpose and stand there and say 75 years ago, the eyes of the world were on this little stretch of beach. And
just think of the bravery when you were maybe in the second rush that was coming and you saw what was happening
in front of you.
I mean, yeah. I don't think people really understand how brave you have to be in the military.
Well,
and not everybody.
You know, when we talk about that greatest generation, you know, as much technology as we have today, right? Everyone agrees that a war like World War II, World War I, even Vietnam will never be fought that way again, right? And I almost would argue that I don't think we ever could. My generation, when I was 17 or 18 years old, I don't think we could have done what that generation did at 17 and 18 years old. I don't think we could have done it. And that's not being disrespectful to my generation or even what that's saying is the bravery and the selflessness of these mostly boys and men who came from New Trier and Hampton and Sioux Falls and, you know, these little towns all across the Midwest. Mm-hmm. And first time away from home, and they were put a gun in their hand and said, go fight, and they did.
But just think, they'd come through the Depression, so they had that steeliness to get through that. But it led to great...
To the liberation,
yes,
right?
Yes, to great victory.
Less than a year later, there was the great victory in Europe. One of the neat things at this museum is they would follow the lives of people. Some of them had died, some of them had survived. And it would basically kind of like, this is where they were from, this was their family, this is what it was like, and this was the day that they died. Or this was the day they survived, and this is what they went on to be. And you kind of like the Band of Brothers movie, you see kind of a little bit about what they did with their life, but how that experience changed them forever.
Right.
So both of my grandfathers were World War II veterans in the Army. One was in Europe and one was in the Pacific. But I never really had an opportunity to really ask or talk to them about their experience. And I don't recall them sharing much. And I think that's so typical, right, that there's not a lot of talk about what they experienced or what they saw. Because when you talk about, you know, we talk about today, we know what post-traumatic stress is. Post-traumatic stress probably wasn't even a word back then. You just had to deal with it. You got on with life, right? You went back, the war ended, you were demobilized, and you were plopped back now into a factory, maybe a desk job, a sales job, as if you had to continue on with life as if it was completely normal. And of course, we know that it wasn't, but they really kind of held it together in a way that was very, very admirable. So Utah Beach... Omaha Beach. Omaha Beach is the one that you always hear about more than Utah Beach, but actually Omaha Beach was the smaller of the two, and there was actually, there was a couple little memorials, but that's about it right there at the beach. The rest of the the time, you wouldn't necessarily know that these were the sites of the greatest amphibious landing in the history of the world. There will never be
another
mobilization like that. There were more ships in a 5-square-mile radius than there are in the entire U.S. Navy today by an exponential amount. They had thousands of amphibious ships. It was just amazing, the mobilization. And these exhibits and these interactive maps just show what it was like for the invasion force to kind of converge, coming from England and all these different areas and meeting right off the coast of France. And then also what it was like for those civilians and the people who lived in the front and in the countryside, right? They were liberated from the Germans, so they were very, very happy. But they lived under bombardment for, you know, and a lot of civilians died during this. So they're also remembered in a lot of these memorials and these exhibits. I also had the opportunity, I went and visited it's called the American Cemetery. And one thing I was surprised about is how many American military cemeteries there are in Europe. I visited one before in Nice, France. A lot of these cemeteries aren't from World War II. They actually go back to World War I. I mean, it's amazing when you think World War I ended in 1918.
Mm-hmm.
World War II started in like 38 or 39, right? So you're talking less than 20 years, or about 20 years of peace. 20 years is nothing.
Mm-mm.
And, you know, the war to end all wars, and so we had so many casualties in World War I that the U.S., government in like 1923 set up it's called the American Battle Commission or whatever, where they actually, their mandate in 1923 was to preserve and create these American cemeteries in Europe that were going to be there kind of in perpetuity.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have a lot of these military cemeteries, but probably the most famous one, the biggest one, is the one that's at Normandy, and that's got just a little less than 10,000 graves of everyone who was buried there was killed in action in Europe. What was fascinating was the cemetery, I think, was dedicated either in 1948 or 1953. What they did is they went and they repatriated all the graves in the countryside, and they consolidated under this one beautiful plot of land that overlooks the ocean. It's so peaceful.
Mm.
But that was a huge undertaking, and that goes as a testament to show, really, to the American government and the American people's regard for the war dead. You don't just leave them in an unmarked grave in a field somewhere. No, we're going to claim the body, we're going to identify it, and we're going to properly inter it. And so you see, just like you go to Fort Snelling, right, you see those perfectly manicured rows, and you stand on one side, and it almost looks like it's a straight line. The stones are so perfectly aligned. And that's the way it was there at the Normandy Cemetery, except their actual the monuments are a little bit different. But it's still the granite marble monuments, and there's 10,000 of them. So that was a very moving experience. When you talk about kind of like the spiritual aspect of it too, you know, I kind of was there, and you kind of think about, you put yourself back in time, and you kind of think about like, what was it like for that 18, 19-year-old, you know, the fear. But also the remember to pray, right, for those who serve, right? That's what we have our Memorial Day, right?
Mm-hmm.
Memorial Day. We often think of Memorial Day as we memorialize everyone who died. But no, Memorial Day is specifically meant to remember American military members that have died in action and service to the nation. You know, there's always an opportunity whenever you visit a cemetery to say prayers for the dead, the rosary. I have, there's a prayer, the way of the cross for the souls in purgatory. So it was a very quiet, incredibly quiet and still full place. Even though you had hundreds of people there, it was so quiet and so respectful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everything was looking in ship-shape condition because they just had the 75th anniversary. You know, the president was there, and a lot of world leaders came to Normandy to have that commemoration. So I felt very privileged to be able to be there less than a month after the huge celebration.
Mm-hmm.
And then also there's museums. There's museums everywhere. There's the big official museums, and then you have the museums that some enthusiasts just decided to set up in their barn, right? Of memorabilia that they've collected and that they've found, right? There's such this nostalgia for anything American in World War II that they want to preserve, and they want to show it off. They want you to come and see it.
Mm-hmm.
So that was very, very, a very special event that, again, kind of goes to show the balance of how you can go on a trip and you can have kind of the spiritual aspect, you can have the solemn aspect, but also I did incredibly fun recreational aspect. I went to a water park, one of those things where I don't know if you've seen, I have a video of it, I'll have to show it to you, but you basically, the tower is like 10 meters high and you go down it and it launches you off. It's a little curve and you launch off and you're launched like 20 feet, 25 feet in the air. And you know, if you're more talented, you'd be doing flips and all that stuff, right? You know, I watched the video of me and it's like I'm flailing as I'm going through the air, right? But this trip had all those aspects of it. It had the sacred, it had the solemn, it had the fun.
God is good.
Amen.
Yes, I'm glad that you had an opportunity to tell us about Normandy. That must have been so moving.
Yeah. So not only the beaches, the Utah Beach, Omaha Beach, but the cemetery, and then all of just the regular, the villages that you're driving through. And one of the neatest things at the museum that they did was they would take pictures, historical pictures, and in most cases, nothing has changed today, and they would superimpose the historical image with the modern image. And it's like you could stand, like where I'm standing in the middle of the road 75 years ago, tanks were driving through. Ugh. And it's just to remind you of that perspective.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for coming in today. We want to say thank you to Father Cole Crockey, host of Searching My Soul on AM 1460 and FM 97.7 KDWA in Hastings.